This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Big show coming up today. We got Ryan Roland Smith talking baseball with us at 3:30. The professor John Clayton with us at 4 o'clock, and at 5 o'clock, as we do every Tuesday at 5, we bring in the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley will join us on the show for a big conversation. How'd it go yesterday, guys? How's everybody doing?
It's good.
Good. How are you?
Good, man. Enjoyed a
How
nice
was your
day.
Time off?
It was a long day. Yeah, it was. I got up really early and did a photo shoot for Chateau Saint Michel. So we did.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Miley set that up. So the two of us were part of it. Did that from like 9 a.m. to 4:30 or something like that, some crazy length, and then went kayaking out in West Seattle, out in Alki.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. Saw a seal. There was like a seal kept popping his head up out of the water. It was like 5 feet behind us, like following us on the water. It was crazy. Just would pop his head up, look around, just stare for a while. It was really cool.
That's a good day off.
Sounds like a date where it was like a commercial where first you're at a winery sipping wine, then you're out on the water kayaking. Are you modeling?
Something for a new line that they've got coming out. We didn't actually do it at a winery. We did it at a house that they had rented out for this photo shoot here in Seattle. So we were doing it there and spent the better part of the day there. But yeah, the kayaking was cool too. Having that seal follow us around for a while was really cool, man. It just kind of kept popping his head up. It would just stare at you. You know, it wouldn't make any noise. Wouldn't really do anything. Just kind of pop his head up, go underwater, pop his head up, stare at you. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
That's good. We hung out with Shannon all day. That was cool, too.
How did that go for you, Jim, more importantly?
It went really well. Shannon and I got along for 3 hours, and she brought us up to speed on what's going on with the Mariners and what we can expect. And, it was fun. And Dave did a good job leading the show, so, yeah.
There was no trading of shots back and forth?
No, not really. I started off the show and I was like, I'm going to have to put these two in timeout a number of times, and then that really never happened.
You were ready to be the dad, though. You were ready to be the enforcer.
Exactly.
I like it. Well, while I was gone, when I got home, I started looking at Twitter and I saw something that that Tom put out there. I think he came up with if 710 put together a softball team. He had a lineup and who he thought would play where and who he thought would hit where. Did you guys see that?
Yeah,
I did see it.
Yeah, I got to look at that. Yeah, what did you think, Bob? Do you think that your talents were wasted at catcher or?
Well, yes.
I'm not sure about coverage in the outfield, man. I'm not so sure about that. I'm not sure about the ability to run out there.
Yeah, we have Clayton in right field and Tom in center field and I don't remember who was in left field, but
Jake Heaps.
Jake could cover some ground, but the other two, I'm not so sure. And catcher in softball is where you hide the weakest link. Usually that's the person that doesn't want the ball hit to them. That's the person that doesn't want to catch the ball, doesn't want to throw the ball, have to field the ball. They just want to be there. So. Yeah, I'm not playing catcher.
Bob, but this is a baseball team, though. It's not a softball team. So, and catching in a baseball game is very important. So, yeah, I think you have a good position there.
Yeah, I feel like I'm too tall for that. I feel like you got to be a little shorter, a little squatter to play catcher effectively. I know that Joe Mauer did it for years, and some taller guys have done it. But, yeah, it's, you know, being 6'3 is too tall for a catcher, in my estimation.
Well, I'll say this, you know, I don't know if anybody remembers Clayton throwing out the first pitch, but I just remember that when he did throw it, he was like as the ball was released, his face was pointing towards third base. So I'm not sure why he would be able to, and I'm not sure if he can run. Can Wassel run? I'm assuming Jake Heaps can run a little bit.
Wassel's got a hip flexor. Sure. Wassel has told me about looking at hills as he's walking looking at it going, oh, man. Walking uphill is a challenge for Tom because he's got some issue with his hip.
Yeah.
So the idea of him running and having speed out there tracking down fly balls doesn't seem realistic.
But I heard him talking on their show today, though, and it sounds like in Little League and Babe Ruth that he was a pretty good center fielder, that he was, you know, death to flying things out there. So
is that right? yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe the hip is healed. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I thought whoever wrote it was really funny. Do we know who wrote this? Who wrote all these little the little clips here? It was really well written. It was funny because they're talking about, you know, Stacy Rost, who's a spitfire. What'd they say about Jim? Desperately wishes to retire but can't due to the fact that he lost most of his fortune in an ill-fated investment in a gold machine.
That's pretty much true.
Oh, that's great. That's great. But, yeah, I saw Danny tweet about it saying he wanted to be traded. But Clayton in right field. I mean, you gotta have a cannon to play right field. You're gonna put your weaker arm in left field, not in right field. Usually that's where Buehner was. You need Ichiro was there. You need a guy who can fire the ball. And I'm not sure that's Clayton. With all due respect,
I just more than anything, I was wondering about the running ability because Clayton, Wassel, I'm pretty sure I could beat both of those guys in a sprint. Maybe Gallant. Except for Jake Heaps, I'm going to say that I could outrun everybody here on this team, yet I was stuck at DH. So maybe not Stelton, but yeah.
Come on, Dave. I'd take Gallant over you. Gallant at 30 years old, you at 56. Come on.
I've heard he's pretty fast. I don't know. I've never seen
a 100-yard dash.
A 100-yard dash, 40-yard dash, 10-yard dash, whatever you want to dash.
I'll put my bottom dollar on it.
Will you?
I've not even seen Paul Gallant. Yeah.
Okay.
We should have a 7-10 race. Wouldn't that be just the most ridiculous thing?
How many fail to make it 100 yards and they're grabbing their hamstring?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I would do. I would get to about 50 and all of a sudden it looked like somebody shot me, like a sniper.
Yeah, you know, I get it. They put the old guy, me, over at first base because they feel like I probably can't move laterally anymore. But I don't think I should be hitting seventh in this lineup. Come on. Danny O'Neill hitting sixth ahead of me? I don't care. You ask my kids. My kids are like, Dad, you got a pretty good bat for being 63. And I'm like, damn right I do. So, yeah, I think I should have been a little higher in that lineup. And they've got Wyman hitting five. I like that. And Stelton, what are you doing hitting fourth? You're the cleanup guy? Are you that good?
I'm good, Jim.
Oh, Bob can hit it.
I can hit.
Bob can poke it. Yeah. I've seen Bob hit some home runs. He's good.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, we were pretty well represented.
Jim's feeling insulted. He's feeling disrespected. I think they took your approach to Tom Brady and said, well, Jim, 63, I mean, this guy is going to be no good. He obviously age. Well, you know how that works with old guys, Jim.
Okay, let me take this one step farther then. Did you play high school baseball for the Kangaroos?
I did not. I played City League.
Okay. All right. Well, I played 2 years at Redmond High School. So there you have it. See?
Were you a starter, Jim?
Yeah. Was I a starter? Yeah. Come on.
Where?
Where'd you play? What position?
Catcher. Yeah, I was a catcher.
Oh, he's a catcher. That's why he's got those bad old knees now.
I think it was a fun little exercise, though, and having a lineup, and then they've even got a starting rotation. Lydia Cruz is our ace of the rotation, and she'll be on the mound in the first game for whoever we face. But yeah, it was fun that they put that together.
Yeah.
And Wassel is the one who wrote it. Mara just texted me, so he did a good job. It was really funny. Like Clayton dubbed the professor, the team's right fielder aspires to one day create baseball's first salary cap, tours with Slayer. Danny O'Neill's an absolute maniac on social media, was his comment there. And he said something about me charging the mound or something. So anyway, it was well done by Wassel. Yeah.
You guys can check that out. I think 710sports.com, they may have put that up there. So you guys can check that out, having a bit of fun with a potential baseball team fielded by 710 ESPN. Meanwhile, Russell Wilson was on another podcast of sorts or a show. Russell, he was on Kevin Hart's got something called Cold Calls. I'm not sure what that is, but I guess it's a show he does on YouTube. He was on it today, and he hit a few different things we want to go over. First of all, speaking of baseball, we know Russell played baseball, had aspirations to play at a very high level. He explained why he chose football over his beloved game of baseball.
I was an All-American in baseball, so out of high school, I got calls in the late first, second, beginning of second round. I turned it down. I wanted $1.5 million or I wasn't going to go. So I got offered like $1.1 and I still turned it down. So my thought was, if it's meant for me, it's going to come back to me.
Mm-hmm.
No need to make a rush decision on it. And so I end up going to NC State, playing two sports and all that. As soon as I get to NC State, though, my dad gets sick. And so he gets sick, he has diabetes, he has to get his leg amputated. And that was a tough time for me in my life, spiritually, emotionally. And honestly, that made me become a man.
Okay.
I got drafted June 8th, 2010. The next day, my dad passes away, June 9th, 2010. So the highest of the high to the lowest of the low, just like that.
Just like
that.
And
that was heavy on me because I had to take control of my own career, my own life, my own destiny, and make the decisions that I needed to make. I had to make a decision, am I going to play football or baseball? And I ended up saying, you know, I'm going to transfer to Wisconsin, do that. And right after Wisconsin, I ended up getting drafted April 27th by the Seahawks, and the rest was history.
Well, and thank goodness he did, because he became the greatest to ever play the position of quarterback in Seahawks history. He's won a Super Bowl. He's been back to another. He's a Pro Bowler. He's talked about amongst the elite in the league. And judging by what anybody who's ever seen him play baseball has said, those are not conversations he would have been a part of in the game of Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Well, and then listening, Jim, you can probably relate to this, having had your father pass away a fairly early age. Bob, you and I both have our fathers, and I can't tell you what he means to me. And that's really difficult for him to have gone through that. I'd forgotten about, you know, all that part. I remember his dad was sick and died, but boy, what a, you know, the next day after he's drafted. But I wonder if, you know, I wonder how much he really loved football over baseball. I bet you it's a lot. I bet you it's a lot more. He just looks like he really loves playing football and just can't get enough of that. And I think certainly Pete always jokes around and says, yeah, Russ couldn't hit the curveball. And I don't even know if that's true or not. But you know, I just feel like the way he's wired is so much more for football. Because remember, he came in his rookie year, he had notes for everybody and we should do this and we should do that. And that was early on when maybe that rankled some of the veterans a little bit. But I just feel like he would have been maybe bored playing baseball and football. There's just so much going on. And, you know, and I'm not saying that skill wise it's necessarily that much harder, but as far as like, you know, the position he plays, especially, you know, reading coverages, doing checks, you know, getting a game plan together. I mean, all that stuff. I feel like he's just more wired for that.
Well, I'm looking at his stats right now because he had two minor league seasons with the Tri-City Dust Devils over there, Pasco, Kennewick, and Richland. And he hit .230, and that was at the age of 21. Then the next year with Asheville at Class A, he hit .228. So maybe Pete Carroll was right about that. And the thing about Russell, too, is that he never has closed the door on baseball. I don't think there's ever been a time. I mean, he hasn't been asked about it for a while, but remember every year it was like, yeah, I haven't given up the thought of playing baseball. And we know that he was with the Yankees, and wasn't it the Rangers there for a while? And it's kind of funny because it always bugged me when he shows up with the Yankees, and it bugged me when he was with the Rangers too, because they're in the AL West. And I know it's small of me to be bugged by something like that, but I'm thinking, come on, man, you're in Seattle. You got to be a Mariners fan. But yeah, it was... You know, when he went to spring training, he just has never really let go of that. I'll bet even at the age of 31, I think he's 31 now, that he's still in the back of his mind thinks, yeah, I should probably be like Michael Jordan and give that a shot sometime. But at this point in his career, I don't think we're ever going to see that happen now.
Yeah, and it feels like, listen, he gets to feed that passion when he goes to spring training, when he's done that with, you know, with the couple seasons that he has. But by all accounts, he was not a guy that had the skill set to do it at the major league level. But, you know,
it's fun, though. Hey, Bob, isn't it fun, though, to see? I mean, you can see Russell, the baseball player, in the quarterback sometimes, though. I mean, some of the moves he makes. Yeah.
So his ability to throw across his body. shows you his transferred skills as an infielder. So you definitely see that. Now, cut number two is interesting here because he talks about being nervous over the height where they measure your height at the combine and overhearing some doubting that he was an NFL caliber player. Here's what he said about that.
Oh, for sure. I have one memory distinctly when this happened. So we go to the combine. It can't have nothing. I mean, just draws. That's it. No, nothing. That's it. And I was going to try to put some socks under these feet and try to get, you know, a couple extra inches. I had my hair all tall and I had it all gelled up. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm going to be good 6 foot, 6'1" with this hair, you know, this hair long, go long. And sure enough, I know I measured myself, my true height. I'm like 5'10", 7", and some extra. And so anyways, sure enough, this dude measured me a 5'10" and a quarter. I'm like,
he turned around, you didn't see this.
I was hot. Is when I'm walking down the aisle, right? And everybody's like, psh, 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 and I'll never forget this. There's a dude on the right. I ain't gonna say who it is. He said to the guy next to him, he said, psh, he'll never make it. He'll never make it.
Wow.
I'll never forget hearing that in my right ear.
Just some random guy motivated Russell Wilson to go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and he talked about his hair being all tall. For some reason, I thought, and I have not kept track of his hairstyles here or when they took place, but didn't he have really short hair coming out of college, or am I wrong about that? I know he buzzed his hair at one point, and the idea that his hair was really tall, I'm trying to remember what he had going when he came out of college, but, you know, yeah, obviously height was certainly an issue.
Well, he's got a little bit of some curls going there on top. I'm just looking at a picture of him at the combine. He's yoked up, that's for sure. But no, I mean, that was kind of a Michael Jordan moment for him, right? The guy who said, "You'll never make it." But yeah, that it's funny. When I went, I was listed at like 6'3" in high school. And then when I got to Stanford, they're like, "Oh, you're 6'2". And then when I went into the NFL, they said I was 6'1 and 15/16". I'm like, come on, man.
What?
You know,
it was those collisions. You were starting to compact.
Yeah, I was getting old. No, that hadn't taken place yet. I think it was just they were more strict as far as measuring you, you know. But I laughed out loud there when he said, "You're just in your drawers." Because, yeah, I mean, I remember having to stand up there. You know, and is this creepy to anybody else? You got to go out on a stage in just a pair of shorts and stand there while a bunch of old men look at you. That was just like, and not like I was like humiliated or anything, but I was just like, man, this is bizarre. But
well,
yeah,
how
and then
long
you
did you
walk
have to
off
stand?
The stage.
Do you remember how long you had to stand out there?
I can't remember, man. But I think you had to stand up. Then you had to like turn around. I mean, it was just
wow.
It was just so weird, and yeah, and you only had on your shorts, you know. But yeah, I mean, remember the picture of Tom Brady where he looks like a
the
little
dad
wet
bod.
Puppy dog. Yeah, and yeah, that's what you had to do. But yeah, they're much more. I wondered if guys ever got like, you know, you could put like pads on the bottom of your bare feet. I wonder if they like check for that, because you could probably get like a makeup artist or something to make it look like, you know, that you have, you know, it's the same skin color and all that stuff. That I always thought maybe, you know, guys, they're probably onto that. But I'm thinking like if you put like one of those little rubber, like almost like an insert or something on the bottom of your feet, if they would notice.
They probably would check that out, I would think. But we know that Russell Wilson's what? Officially 5'10 and 5'8 inches, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so ever since Russell Wilson, I mean, he finally, you know, we look at quarterbacks differently now, because I admit that anybody under 6 feet that was a quarterback before Russell Wilson, I thought, just like that guy that said he'll never make it, that's the way I felt too about quarterbacks. But Russell Wilson changed all of that.
Yeah, well, cut
number
three.
Interesting because,
go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say real quick about just the really tall quarterbacks tend to not make it. I remember Sean Salisbury talking to Clayton about this, and there's, you know, I'm going to say, I'm trying to think of who is like the most successful. Like 6'6 is like the cutoff, like, because there's been 6'7, six. Remember Dan McGuire was 6'8.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you can be too tall. But yeah, I don't care how tall you are. Yeah. Nobody can see over offensive linemen. You got 6'5", 6'6", 6'8", guys playing, you know, tackle. Nobody can see over the top of their offensive lineman or a rushing D-line. And I remember Pete Carroll saying that to somebody who said, well, he's not tall enough. And, you know, the guy was a quarterback, and he goes, well, were there times you couldn't see in the NFL? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, what'd you do? Moved. Well, that's what he'll do. You know, I mean, he's trying to find a lane, and that's pretty simple. So, I guess, you know, I understand why there was that stigma, but yeah, certainly it's Russell broke right through that one.
Well, we've got a few more cuts from Russell we'll get to later on in the show, some interesting stuff with him, but right now let's take two.
It's time to take two, brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife.
Take two.
As more players opt out of the NBA return and the Nuggets shut down their facility because of positive COVID tests, Commissioner Adam Silver says it's still uncertain whether this return will work out.
Never full steam ahead, no matter what. I think one thing we're learning about this virus is much is unpredictable. And I think we and our players together with their union, the Players Association, look at the data on a daily basis. And if there was something to change that was outside of the scope of what we're playing for, certainly we would revisit our plans. I'd also say, we're testing daily. We haven't put a precise number on it, but if we were to see a large number of cases and we were to see spread in our community, that would, of course, would be a cause for us to stop as well.
I mean, he's being as upfront and as honest as it sounds like he could be. You know, they're going ahead with it. They're doing what they can, but they allow for the possibility that maybe this whole thing gets shut down, depending on if this continues to spike everywhere or there are mass infections, what have you. So I'm not sure if anybody's got an issue with Adam Silver. I think he's handled this as well as anybody has in any of the major sports.
Yeah, well, and I think he's going to be kind of at the mercy of what public opinion is. Of that. So, and you know, it's just so difficult. I mean, you hear that, yeah, the tests are up, but then you also hear that the, you know, fatal cases are down, and you know, and especially in children, but you know, I mean, it's almost like zero risk, but you know, there's just so much fear and surrounding this that I think a lot of players who think that they are at risk actually aren't. But I mean, this whole thing has started off where, well, we need a vaccine and that's it. And so anything in comparison to that is going to be a failure and something that's incredibly risky and dangerous to people, I think. So, yeah, I just think it's about everybody's, ability to accept risk.
It's a tough one, though, because every single day, like this morning, I think I was watching First Take, and then all of a sudden they've got this breaking story about the Nuggets shutting down their practice facility after players testing positive for the coronavirus. And DeAndre Jordan, I mean, you're seeing all this, and you see players opting out. I wonder how the NBA is going to make it happen. I wonder about Major League Baseball, and I especially wonder about the NFL and how they're just a locomotive full speed ahead. I think that train's going to have to slow down a little bit. We'll see if they can pull it off, though.
Minor League Baseball released a statement today confirming news that was expected, but is still unfortunate. There will be no 2020 minor league season.
Yeah, this is just confirmation of what we already knew, and it's a massive bummer for a lot of these guys, and we've seen different people like, you know, Sin Choo Choo and David Price and others step up to pay some of these guys, and organizations pay some of these guys. So, yeah, again, confirmation of what you already knew was going to happen, and hopefully they're going to be able to keep that dream alive in terms of their career, because I know a lot of these guys talked about potentially this being the end of that dream. So we won't know until we get into next season and see who comes back, who doesn't. But yeah, a massive bummer, to say the very least.
Yeah, well, and you know, there may be some guys, and we'll never know, that that maybe would have never gotten COVID-19, and yet this is the end of their career. I always think about that every year in football at cut time. You know, it's like this is the last chance for a lot of these guys, that fourth preseason game. And so, yeah, I wonder how many people will 10 years from now look back and think, yeah, that was kind of what did me in. It was the lack of opportunity that I got to play baseball, and especially some of these guys, they would take the risk I talked to a doctor buddy of mine. He was like, yeah, if I was a young player, I'd be like, yeah, let's go. You know, not in the high-risk group. But, you know, if they're canceling the season, there's really nothing you can do.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And I just wonder, you know, teams like the Mariners that are rebuilding, if they're hurt the most in a season like this. And I would expect the answer is yes. But they're going to try and make the best of it with that taxi squad down at Cheney Stadium. And hopefully it won't push them too far back in wanting to compete and contend for the playoffs in this decade.
All right, coming up, we're actually going to talk some baseball with our favorite Bogan, Ryan Roland Smith. He joins us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We're talking baseball with our buddy Ryan Roland Smith. Ryan, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Good. You know, as much as conversation in sports centers around the coronavirus and players opting out and what may or may not happen, guys are going to be reporting to, I guess, what are we calling it, spring training 2.0 or summer training, whatever you want to call it. Just as a fan,
right?
I guess, right? That whatever you want to call it, they're coming back, you know, and we'll be able to see baseball for real. How excited, now that it's becoming more real, we're getting that much closer, we're less than a month away. How excited are you as a guy that covers the game, played the game? How excited? Where are you at right now?
Yeah, I'm excited. My first thought of a 60-game season was, you know, what a joke because it's so short. That was my initial reaction, and also to a frustration that they could have sorted this out and had at least possibly 50% of the season, you know, you won games if they figured all this out. But on the flip side, when you're looking at it, we're covering a team like the Mariners, that anything can happen. You've got all these young guys who are just completely oblivious to only having 3 weeks to prep in their little spring training 2.0, whatever you want to call it. And then you've got a chance that if you win 10 straight, man, you're right there in the playoff run. So that's nuts. I mean, it works out good for the team that we're covering. So I'm excited, and 100%, man. I mean, this coronavirus, I've had a gutful of it now. I'm ready to go for some sport and covering some baseball and talking and giving my expert opinion as much as I can.
Yeah, hey, Ryan, so sorry about that, buddy. You cut out there on me. I interrupted you. But, what do you think? I mean, look, I said yesterday I feel like for Zimmerman and, you know, Leak, I mean, these guys that are opting out, that's, you know, it's their personal choice. And you can't really, I guess, criticize it. Everybody has their own level of risk, right? But for the younger guys and for you, where do you think you would have been on this as far as, going back to work?
100%, Damon, no question, I would have played. You know, and this is not some, you know, political statement about the coronavirus and the severity of it. But, yeah, for me, I got a family I have to support. I'm not in a situation where I make, you know, $10 million a year prior. I've got a family to support. I'm just trying to put myself in shoes I would have had when I was playing. But, this is my livelihood. This is my career. I have to play. And, you know, and I'll deal with the consequences if that's what it is. I think in situation, you know, Mike Leake, I think too, let's add these little factors to it as well. You're halfway through summer. The first chance you've really gotten to stay at home in years, if any, with your family, you're already in that feeling of shutdown mode or that, you know, staying at home mode. And all of a sudden you've got to pick up and go. And you do have this opportunity to opt out. And again, I'm not saying, I don't know what his beliefs are on the coronavirus or how severe he feels it is, and health risk if he's got someone in his family who may, be at a higher risk or anything like that. But I think it's, you know, and if you see a lot of these guys opt out, there could be that, you know, slim chance to say, well, man, I can actually opt out of this season. I'm only going to play for 2 months. I'm only going to make X amount of dollars. Why not, you know, reset and go into next year as a free agent coming off a pretty decent year? Hey, I might just opt out. And I know that, and you're not going to just admit that I just don't want to play this year. I'm not saying that's the case for anyone in particular, but I think that's a massive option because you've been sitting at home for the first time. Summer's rolling around. You got your family. You know, you have enough money, obviously, to live off and then some. You know, why not just pack it up and resume next off season? So I think it's going to be an attractive offer for a lot of players. I think you're going to see more of this.
Ryan, I heard you talking to Stacy and Jake yesterday, and it sounds like it's really going to be, at least from your perspective, really difficult for the pitchers to get up to speed right away.
Yeah, and look, I'm talking from, you know, from personal experience. It took me forever to get going. It's funny, the years that I said this yesterday on the radio with Jake and Stacy, the years I had to come in and make a team, you know, 2007, 2008, and years later on in my career, where I was trying to, you know, resurrect myself. They're the years I got off to a great start. I came in and there was a sense of urgency. The years that I felt like, oh, I'm already on the team, I know that can be a dangerous place. And there's a lot of guys that, you know, they basically know, and everything's so transparent now, the communication, that, you know, three quarters of these guys know they're already on the team. You go in and Cadillac, I'm telling you right now, week three is not enough. Because you have to throw that hanging curveball for it to get hit. You have to get that timing and sequencing, you know, mechanically over and over and over against hitters, not just in bullpens, not in simulated games. You don't get the same thing like you do in spring training. And I'm not sitting here saying that, you know, spring training should be longer or anything like that, but personal experience, when I go into this and use it as a preparation, I'm screwed. And that first month of the season, I really struggle. And that's what happened, literally, that's what threw my career off a cliff in 2010. I came into that year knowing I was on the team, and I went long term. I was thinking, oh, you know, they're going to stay healthy, they're going to get 200 innings, all these things that don't matter, as opposed to really worrying about what's happening right now. So I think, you know, and again, if this is communicated to the players, where Scott Service walks in and says, guys, every single game counts, which is the case, and maybe some of these veteran guys, or maybe some of these guys who already know they're on the team, have that sense of urgency, they might be okay. But man, for a pitcher, 3 weeks is really tough. And not to mention, too, it's not like they're coming out of, what are these guys that throwing bullpens in their backyard? I've seen them on Instagram making a joke about it, and all of a sudden it's like, boom, strap it on, let's go, we're going to play. And they've been throwing on some sandlot field. Nothing compares to facing hitters. So it's going to be interesting. We'll see how it all plays out.
How do you think this season goes for Scott Service? We were talking about this last week, and I felt like, Ryan, that, listen, they were going into this season with no expectation of a postseason. That was sort of the mantra. It's about developing the youth and getting these young guys experience, so playoffs weren't really realistic. To me, there's very little to no pressure in a 60-game season where you already were looking at a developmental season. So as a manager, how do you think this goes for Scott Service? Is he able just to kind of be loose and try a bunch of different things he wouldn't other try, or put guys in positions he wouldn't otherwise put them in a 162-game season?
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think it's still, you know, you can still classify this as a development season. Look, if they get off to a hot start and they're, you know, 20 games away from having the chance to play in the playoffs, but you know what? You got young players. Let them have that playoff experience. I still don't think there's bigger expectations for him because anything's changed or there's an opportunity here for these young players to somehow get to the playoffs. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, I'll be talking to you guys in October and kind of see how we feel about this year. Whoever won the World Series after 60 games, it's like, do you put an asterisk next to that? Because it's just bizarre. But I think, too, on the flip side of that, they still have to stay away, I feel like. Don't rush these players. Don't get these guys, you know, gun-shy. All of a sudden, you throw a Logan Gilbert in there too early and he's not ready. He gets hit around. And I've seen that a ton from players who just get crushed early on and they're trying to make this massive adjustment because they're like, man, maybe I'm not good enough to be in the big leagues, or these extra expectations. I think there's enough guys there, the middle of the road. I'm talking Austin Nola, Tom Murphy, guys like that who still have to prove themselves on an everyday basis. Give them those chances. I wouldn't look at this and say, well, this is, you know, because this is a write-off year or anything, however you want to say it, all of a sudden, hey, let's throw in Julio Rodriguez in the last month of the season. I still think there's still those years. Here's a classic example. Adam Jones, there's all this pressure to bring him up super early. They didn't. They let him come up in September, you know, when the team was already out of it, and then slowly sort of make his way, and obviously got traded. But there was a lot of pressure to bring him up earlier, and I think careers change when you do that, because the expectations all of a sudden is for you to come out of the gates red hot, and you don't, and you kind of get, you know, you kind of have that bad taste in your mouth. So I think it's still super important for these guys to still take it slow. There's plenty of depth there, and let some of these middle of the range guys prove themselves who had a good year last year.
Ryan, great stuff. We appreciate it. We'll talk again next week. Stay safe out there, my friend.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks.
All right. Reminder, we've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. It's the 1995 ALCS Game 1. It's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers, Local 54. We're hearing more and more about a growing number of players opting out of the NBA and Major League Baseball seasons, and our very own Jim Moore wonders if the sports world should just take 2020 off. We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. It's free. If you haven't downloaded it yet, you can download it right now, and you've got access to everything. Listen to the show live from the app, listen to podcasts, text. You've got everything right there in one spot. So check that out if you haven't downloaded that yet. We'll talk some football coming up at the top of the hour with the professor, John Clayton. But we are hearing and seeing a growing list of athletes that are tapping out saying, you know what, it's not worth the risk for me to play this season, whether we're talking about NBA or Major League Baseball. And before we get to a story that Jim wrote that's up at 710sports.com, I want to play a cut from Buster Olney talking about those concerns that Major League Baseball players have over the safety protocols in place.
Among club officials, just 4 days into this, since baseball agreed to have a season, there are enormous concerns that they're going to be able to pull off the health and safety protocol. What I'm hearing is complications about travel, complications about arranging testing. Remember, there's no precedent for this. There's been no training for any of this. There's been no formal education of players. And along those lines, what I'm hearing from teams is they're getting initial pushback from some players regarding the health and safety protocol. Some players are ready to go all in on social distancing and wearing masks, and other players are skeptical about doing that. And let's face it, baseball has a better chance of making this work if everyone's pulling the rope in the same direction.
Now, when he says they're skeptical about doing that, I'm wondering if they're skeptical that it'll work at all, or if they're of the group that says, you know what, I don't want to wear a mask, you're infringing on my rights or something. So I don't really know what he means where he's talking about the group of players that are skeptical of the masks and wearing them as part of the protocol here. But concerns across the board, is there a player that you think could be the domino that knocks down the rest? If a player like Mike Trout raised his hand and said, you know what, I'm out, I'm not playing this season, or another high-profile player, whoever you want to throw out there, whether it's a Bryce Harper or whoever, that says, you know what, I'm done, and then maybe that encourages or gives some level of confidence to another player who doesn't have that stature to say, you know what, I'm not going to play this season either.
Or what if a guy like that gets seriously ill from the coronavirus?
Yeah.
I've
yeah.
always said this. I don't think we can handle it. I really don't. And it could be still like a very, very, very low percentage. But if that happens, I feel like we just wouldn't be able to handle it the way that the science has been being approached right now. There's just so much fear. So, yeah, I don't it's a good question. And, I'm not sure if maybe the other players are looking at it differently. Jim, I'll let you, I mean, I know you wrote an article about it with on 710sports.com when we had Bill Plaschke on and said basically that we should all wait for the vaccine, right?
Well, yeah, that was part of it. And, Bill Plaschke, that was when I first thought, yeah, he's got a good idea here. There's so many unknowns with the virus, and everyone is trying to deal with these own unknowns and dealing with it the best way they can possibly do it, but man, it just seems like it changes every single day. You find out about more cases and more concerns and testing and all these different things. And so when Plaschke wrote in the LA Times in April, I thought, yeah, this is a good idea. Why not postpone everything until January? And you'd have the second wave of the virus. They always talk about that coming back in the fall. So that's a way you'd avoid that. In the 6 months that you have from now until the start of January, you'd learn a lot more about the virus. You might have a vaccine by then. You might be able to have fans come to NFL games in January if you were to treat January like the usual September for the NFL. You might have the 12s back at the stadium by then. I don't know. I just was more and more thinking it's just such a strange year. It's such a big risk for a lot of these players and fans, everybody that's involved, coaches. We heard about Dan Hughes today, the WNBA Seattle Storm. He's not going to coach this year. He's in his 60s, and if I'm not mistaken, he's had a bout with cancer, and so he's pulling out.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's all these different things going on. Tomorrow we're going to wake up, guaranteed. We'll be watching ESPN, and we'll look at the little ticker on the bottom, and there'll be another named player that's either pulling out or contracted the disease. So I just thought, well, yeah, why not just postpone everything? Just wait until January. Yeah. And then have college football when college basketball is going on. And Plaschke was saying, hey, you could have a Final Four for basketball. And then on the play the semifinal games on Saturday. You could have the national championship game football on Sunday. And then the national championship game in basketball on Monday. And I thought, yeah, that'd be a heck of a weekend. Why not do that? And you know,
yeah,
you,
but
you
at could, what cost, though?
No, I know. I know there's a cost there and money involved and different things. But I just thought, yeah, I just feel like that's a better way to approach it, because I think once you get these seasons going, I think more and more people are going to be going, man, that was kind of, yeah, they should have thought of this, they should have thought of that, but you know, it's impossible to think of those things right now until they actually come up.
Yeah, well, what if the vaccine doesn't come? Also, I mean,
that's true.
The other thing. I mean, are we going to put it off another 6 months, year, and you know, and then also, you know, the cases, people are getting sick. Well. Is it severe? I mean, we heard this, you know, Moyer talked about it the other day. He said, what was it, 27 guys at Clemson got tested positive for the coronavirus, and none of them were sick. And you know, I think somebody texted in, well, yeah, they can spread it. Yeah, but that's why you keep them away from people. So, like, you know, the WNBA coach, absolutely, he shouldn't. He's in a high-risk category. But, you know, for, you know, 99% of people under 60, it's really not been a problem. So, I mean, I just feel like we should start to move towards, hey, look, you got to really protect these people. I mean, diabetes is a really, that's an underlying condition that has been particularly, it's been particularly nasty for and fatal for those people, people with respiratory illnesses, things like that. And then certainly the age part of it. But I don't know. I'm just playing devil's advocate here because, with everything, I mean, there's always the question that always needs to be asked that never gets asked, at what cost? Because, you know, there's a lot of people that are, you know, like for these kids, if they're talking about locking down school, there's parents that have to stay home and then they can't go to work and they can't afford a nanny or, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, economic things. What about suicides? What about overdoses? What about, you know, all of these other things that, you know, go along with that, not to mention, you know, people's livelihood and, you know, and so it's a difficult one. I'm just playing, you know, devil's advocate, but I just feel like shutting down. I mean, we're able to do our jobs, so it's great, right? But, you know, to me, I feel like at a certain point, you know, and then the numbers are just, you can find, you know, I feel like there's a lot of numbers that are naive to medical science. I mean, we're getting information from all kinds of different people. And so, you know, it's kind of hard. Do you guys find this? It's kind of hard to know, what are the actual numbers? Like, who's really at risk? Who's really dying? What are the percentages of people dying? And, you know, how bad it is? And, you know, I think when I sit home and I think about it, the fear takes over because I'm not out there and I'm stuck in my house and it gets worse and worse and worse. So I don't know. I don't know what your guys' experience on this has been. I'm not the cowboy saying, yeehaw, let's get back out in the deep water, everybody. Go out there and party and have fun. But I'm just like, man, it's starting to get to a point where, you know, you kind of have to look at, okay, let's evaluate the risk and let's see, you know, like I said, at what cost? At what cost is this continued lockdown going to be? And,
well,
you know, that's something else that I think needs to be looked at a little bit.
Well, the thing is, Dave, and for me, the number's one. I mean, if you have one college football player die from this, then that's enough to shut the whole thing down.
Really? One player out of the hundreds of thousands or whatever?
Yeah, wow. Well, okay, I read a story, CBSSports.com, check this out, and maybe, you know, maybe you'll be the devil's advocate on this one, too. There was a University of Illinois computer science professor who said that he thinks 30 to 50% of the players will be infected at some point, and he anticipates there being 3 to 7 deaths. Now, whether you might dispute and refute everything that he's saying, but when I read that, I thought, oh, my God, if there's even one college football player who dies from the coronavirus, yeah, I think it shuts down the whole thing, and it wasn't worth playing the season if you lose just one kid to that.
Hmm.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, those are tough decisions, right? I mean, I don't want to sit there and say, well, you know, I'm that guy, too bad for him, all the rest of us got to carry on, you know? I mean, that's one of the things. Like, I hear the conversation, though, get shut down that way a lot of times, where, you know, somebody will say, person A says, well, the death rate is down and, you know, people at risk or this, that, and the other. And then person B says, well, my cousin died of the coronavirus. And so then that just entirely shuts the whole thing down. I feel like that can't happen. That we can't you know, govern, I guess, that way, this whole thing. But, you know, I don't even know who the hell's in charge. So, you know, again, I mean, we can sit here and do our jobs, and that's great. And I'm not saying, hey, throw everybody out there and, you know, if people die, fine, no problem. That's a bad thing. There's no way around that one. So it's where I think that there's a lot of really, really difficult decisions that have to be made.
Yeah, I don't know what the right decision is, because it's such a unique thing. Everybody's trying to feel their way through it. How do you keep the economy going and keep people solvent without risking their lives? I mean, you there has to be something in between, and I think they're trying to find that happy medium. As far as consumption of information, I'm not going to sit here as somebody without a medical degree and challenge somebody that's got one. Right. I'm going to lean on the experts. I will defer to the experts, not the talking heads, not the politicians, not the commentators. Let me hear from the top epidemiologist in the world. Let me hear from Fauci. Let me hear from Dr. Birx. Let me hear from Dr. Gupta, you know, doctor being the operative. And if they tell me something I don't like, well, then that's up to me just to deal with it as an adult. Yeah, I may not like the news, but I'm going to defer, you know, this whole petulant. Well, I'm not going to do what the doctor says because I don't want to. Well, okay. I guess their education and their experience means nothing, and you know more, so have fun. I mean, it's just at some point you have to take responsibility as an adult and consume some news that may not be pleasing to you, but I will always defer to the experts, and those experts have doctor in the title. So I'm just...
Well, and a lot of them have varied ideas of what the numbers are, you know? And so you kind of... And Jim, you said this. I'm going with Dr. Fauci. You know, I go with a guy named Scott Atlas, and the reason why is because he's at the Hoover Institute at Stanford, so I'm a little, you know, biased towards him. But, I mean, he's a senior fellow and chief neuroradiologist at Stanford Medical School, and, you know, I listen to him. But you even get different opinions or ideas from doctors as well. You know, they don't all agree on this stuff. So, yeah, it's incredibly confusing.
All right, coming up, the professor talked about how Bruce Irvin is going to be different in his return to the Seahawks on his show today. We'll get his thoughts on that. You guys have football questions, text them in, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll give your questions to the professor as John Clayton joins us next year with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.